The following episode contains sensitive topic information that may not be appropriate for young listeners, as well as religious or other views that may not reflect those of the Sirens team.
Hey, hey, hey out there. Hey, Lindsay. Hey, Ryan. Hey, listeners and viewers. Hope everybody's having a good week. Seems like it should already be Thursday or Friday, as long as this week has been.
It's been a year this week.
Yeah.
Like a whole year.
But we're here and we're ready to have some fun and bring our listeners a strange tale that I had not heard of before, even though it is an Appalachian tale. I had not heard of it before until we were researching topics and I came across it somewhere. I can't even remember where I saw it. And I was like, what is this? So hopefully everybody will enjoy it as much as we do. We've been trying to set up a time with the Coffin Talking Podcast people, but we haven't actually had a time that jives with everybody.
We haven't got there. It's TBD, though. We're definitely going to do it.
Yeah.
That's going to be an awesome episode because the things that we have. And yes, I can't wait. I'm excited.
We're building the anticipation.
Yeah, we are every week.
We're building it up.
We are. And we've gotten more followers even since last week, a lot more Instagram followers. And a lot of those are our fellow spooky podcasts. So we give them a shout out, and as well as anybody else who has followed and liked our social media. So today we're going to jump right in and we're going to bring you the stories, because there's a lot of different stories about the moon-eyed people of the Appalachians. And before we get started, we've all done some research, so if we kind of overlap and play off each other, that's going to be fine. So I'm going to dive in first. I went down a rabbit trail, and I came across a website called BlueRidgeMotorcyclingMagazine.com, and it's a story that a motorcyclist wrote after he saw a picture of the statue, which we'll get into that a little bit later.
Do you want me to pull it up now or you want me to wait?
You can pull it up now. Yeah, go ahead. So he saw a photo of this statue that is in a museum in Murphy, North Carolina. And he read the story about the moon-eyed people. And these statues, they believe, date from about 500 A.D., so they're very old, and it got him curious. And so he jumped on his motorcycle and he goes to Murphy, North Carolina. And this is what he wrote. So I'm just going to read what he wrote. He said, "The lure of folk tales and the chance to see some strange artifacts associated with them prompted me to venture deep into a corner of the Blue Ridge Mountains in search of the legend of the Moon-Eyed People, a mythical race of small, blue-eyed, underground-dwelling beings who inhabited this region centuries before the Cherokee even arrived. It was a photo of the statue that really motivated me to take a deeper journey into this legend. I had heard the myth decades ago as a native of Western North Carolina." So he said, "A myriad of theories surround the legend of the Moon-Eyed People. Are they a lost expedition of Welsh explorers, a forgotten branch of human evolution, aliens? Well, in Murphy, North Carolina, the Cherokee County Museum is located next to the police department. And there's a strange sculpture there. I met with Billy Ray Palmer, a local historian and retired professor at Tri-County Community College. He's the region's foremost expert on the myths, legends, and history of this corner of the state. He happily regaled me with the story behind the statue, and he tossed in some trivia about the town of Murphy. He told me the Cherokee first arrived in these hills around 1100 AD, but they soon found they weren't alone. They said in their myths that when they moved in here, there were already a group of people living here. They were short, white, flat-faced, blue-eyed, and they could not see to work in the bright sunshine. So they came out in the evening and the nights to do their work. the Cherokee then called them the Moon-Eyed people. And eventually, the Cherokee displaced them or they migrated elsewhere. Now, the rivers across the southeastern U.S. often drew Native people to this became a welcoming spot for both the Cherokee and the European settlers who followed them. Perhaps the desire to be close to water is what drew the mysterious little hominids called the Moon-Eyed people. They were on the east bank of the Valley River, crossed from the Cherokee. So the Cherokee were on one side and they were on the other. According to the myths, the Moon-Eyed people were afraid to cross the river because of the big red leech. The Cherokee would test a young warrior's bravery by making him cross the river where the big red leech lurked as a rite of passage. But what was the big red leech? In my opinion, this guy says, it was a big catfish. It would have been red because of all the iron ore down there in the river. Palmer said he has seen 3 feet long catfish feeding near the riverbank and noted that a boy caught a 6 foot long catfish elsewhere in North Carolina a few years ago. After the Indian removal in 1838, Murphy was the site of Fort Butler, which was a collection area along the Trail of Tears, where more than 3,000 Cherokee passed through on their forced march west. The area was sold off by the government. A settler purchased the site, and he's the one who unearthed the statue that you see on the screen in 1840 while clearing the land for farming. Palmer said the statue was then purchased by a motel owner and remained a local curiosity before eventually being put on display at the museum in 2015. We've had several archaeologists and anthropologists look at it, said Palmer. They concur that it is authentic. It's pecked out of soapstone and talc. It would have been whiter than it is now because of the soapstone and the talc, but where it was found, there is a lot of iron ore in the river, probably what turned the catfish red, and it discolored the statue somewhat. Staring into the flat faces and round eyes of the statue, which stands about 4 feet tall and weighs nearly 400 pounds, one cannot escape the similarities to modern pop culture representation of aliens. So that's one story. And then I came across a few books that actually mention these Moon-Eyed people. So in 1797, Benjamin Smith Barton, and Lindsay, you can bring up the that book now if you want to. He was an American botanist, a naturalist, and physician who wrote a book called The New Views of the Origin of the Tribes and Nations of America. He explains that these people were called Moon-Eyed people because they saw very poorly throughout the day and had a number of different features that were not like the rest of the Native Americans. Barton wrote, citing as a source Colonel Leonard Marbury, that the Cherokee tell us when they first arrived in the country, which they inhabit, they found it possessed by certain Moon-Eyed people who couldn't see in the daytime. And these wretches they expelled, is what the colonel told him. Another book written by ethnographer James Mooney in 1902 describes how there is a dim but persistent tradition of the mysterious ancient people who preceded the Cherokee in Lower Appalachia. The American anthropologist described ancient legends suggesting that the white-skinned people built numerous ancient structures in the area, including perhaps one of the largest ancient cities in Northern America, and it was named Cahokia. But curiously, scholars know very little about Cahokia today. The city's original name is unknown, as the ancient builders left no written records behind. The Fort Mountain State Park is believed to have been erected by the Moon-Eyed people. An 885-foot low stone wall and mounds in the surrounding area are believed to have been built by this curious race of people, and they too date to around 500 AD. So I thought it was interesting that there are actually a couple of books by, you know, pretty good sources that mention these people. And I know that Ryan and Lindsay are going to get into more of the theories. We each went down, I think, our own little rabbit hole. But there are a lot of theories. And I thought it was weird. In one thing I read, it said that not only were their eyes sensitive to the sun, but their skin, of course, because they were so light-skinned, almost like translucent, one source said. So it's strange to think about, because when I think about the Cherokee, of course, you know, Ryan and I have talked about how we have Cherokee in our bloodline through our paternal grandmother. I think about, you know, darker skin, darker hair. A lot of them were fairly tall. So these people would have stood out because they didn't look anything like any of Native American tribes. And so just thinking about how they predated those tribes, that's mind blowing to me that we don't know more about them and that we haven't found any other statues. Lindsay, if you'll bring that one other statue picture up on screen, this one is in the National Museum of the American Indian, and it's just a modern like sculpture that someone did, a Cherokee artist actually did of the Moon-Eyed people. Because that's cool. Like I said, all of the Cherokee knew about this legend wherever they lived in the Appalachians. They knew about the Moon-Eyed people, which is interesting. And so this is an interesting sculpture too. And I wanted to bring that up for our viewers who are watching on YouTube to see. But anyway, that's kind of what I found. And I thought it was interesting reading the story through the eyes of the man that, you know, hopped on his motorcycle and decided he'd just go see for himself. So
how far away is Murphy from you? Do you know?
Murphy from me? I don't know, but I'll look it up right quick.
Yeah, because that would be something cool we could do this summer, because I would like to go see it.
Yeah,
I went to Murphy once a couple of years ago. It wasn't far, 3 or 4 hour drive from me, and I live here in Tennessee. And we went fishing. We just went down, stayed a weekend in a cabin, and it had an awesome time. But I didn't know anything about the Moon-Eyed people at that time. But I've been meaning to go back fishing, but who knows? Might catch a couple Moon-Eyed people in a cave or.
Did you see that red leech down there?
If it's that big, I'm gonna try to catch it. It'll probably eat me or drag me in.
That's so creepy to me. I don't like
that. Can you imagine
a lot of like big things under the water? No, thank you.
What's the name of that fish that burrows in the mud at the bottom of the river and you can catch it with your hands if you get it at a certain time? Is that what is it? There's some kind of fish.
Isn't that catfisting?
Catfishing? I don't know.
Cat fisting.
I don't know. Yes.
And it's like on their arm.
Yeah.
It's called, noodling, right? Like noodling. That's what they call it.
Yeah.
Well,
a lot of catfish will go down and do stuff like that. I mean, there's probably several, but catfish normally like to go down and do things like that.
I can't imagine catching a 6-foot catfish as a boy, as an adult, much less a kid. But this says, Google Maps says that Murphy is 4 hours, 14 minutes from where I live. So
kind of a trip.
It's a trip. But anyway,
but
I would want to go see. You know, I think that'd be cool to go see the statues. I just wish there were more things. You know, I guess you could see the remains of the stone wall that's still there. I know y'all have some more info on that. So
I feel like every episode that we do, I'm like, oh, we should go see that. We should go do that. Like every episode, I'm like, oh, that's so fun. Let's go.
I know. We could have a whole summer road trip. Yeah, just hitting all the different places.
Sirens road trip as well.
Yeah.
We should start a funding account and just say, where do y'all want us to go next? Since you already hit the road, right?
Yeah. And we'll go live.
But one thing that you were talking about, to jump in, they're cave dwelling, and we talked about the eyes and the skin, and there's been several movies out there about the absence of darkness. I think Vin Diesel's in one. I can't really remember what the name of it is. It slipped my mind. But when they're not in the dark, I mean, when they're not in the sunlight, their eyes turn almost white, which is kind of like a description of the moon people, which is described kind of like a really light blue or like a moon-like eyes, right? They're a little bit bigger because they're trying to draw more light in.
Right.
And then this pigmentation on the skin becomes very fair, like albino-like, you know, for the same thing. So to me, if you see one of these people at night, they would almost be like glowing.
Yeah.
You know, and like, you know, I could see the alien resemblance where they had the flat face.
Yeah.
You know, and I've tried to look or like kind of figure out some pictures and stuff, you know, and they're short or heavy, you know, they're like almost elf like or leprechaun like or, you know, hobbit, something like that. But
yeah,
I understand that the Cherokee may have drove some of them out, you know, when they built the wall that was 900 feet long, 12 foot wide, which is crazy. I mean, you're trying to keep something massive out to have something 12 foot thick.
Yeah.
A wall, 12 foot thick and 10 foot high, you know. And I'm thinking, you know, that if they either they was completely driven out or with society and the uprising of civilization, since they live in the caves, you know, maybe there was not as much need for them to come to the surface anymore. So maybe there are still some things going around Murphy, North Carolina, or some of the different areas. They just stay underground because they don't come up until nighttime.
Yeah. You know, and, so, you know, you think about it, had that almost 900 foot long, 12 foot thick, 7 foot high wall. There had to be quite a few of them to build that. I mean,
they were supposed to be small.
Yeah.
They were not big, like,
tiny. Right. So there had to be.
They were small.
There had to be more of them than we're, you know, probably at first thought we think about. But it said in some of the Cherokee accounts that they went to war with them and to drive them out. And so there had to be enough of them that they were concerned, you know, they wanted them off the land. So it makes you wonder, like, where did they go? Are they still around? How many of them were there? How many of them are there now if they're still around? But I tried to find some stories about how some people believe that they are descendants of, like, some kind of alien human race. I thought that I could. Now, there is a book out there, and it talks about the Nordic people and the Welsh people that came over, and it talks about how they may have possibly bred with an alien race that was here, and that's where these people came from. It's interesting.
I think that there's all these different kinds of aliens, and then the Nordics are like a type of alien because they look very similar to, like, blonde hair, blue-eyed, pale-skinned people. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting.
Yeah. There is one book out there. I don't have it. I found it on Amazon, but I couldn't find a lot online to that related to that, kind of going down that trail. So it would be interesting.
It makes
I love a good alien tie-in.
It makes you wonder real quick. You know, the Cherokee Indians and stuff, obviously they had this feud, and they wanted to, like, exterminate or eliminate each other. If they only come out at nighttime, you know, and they're 3 foot tall, what exactly damage or what were they doing to cause so much hatred or so much anxiety between them and the Cherokees, right? And also another really cool thing that I read, and this goes along with what you was talking about, the Welsh and things like that. A Cherokee chief, let's see if I can pronounce this right.
Is it Oconostoda? Yeah.
Recounted the story of the moon-eyed people in Tennessee to Tennessee Governor John Sevier in 1782, who was an old man at the time. And Oconostoda repeated the story told to him by his ancestors that white men had long ago crossed the Great Water, which is the Atlantic Ocean, and first landed near the mouth of the Alabama River near Mobile, Alabama. So, you know, you hear about Columbus and stuff like that, you know, and this is a different version of, okay, there was different people here first. Yeah. So I thought that was interesting. It kind of makes you want to go down a different rabbit hole. Okay, what is this? And what is it about the moon-eyed people that upset the Cherokees? What were they doing?
Yeah, exactly.
that's what was like on my mind the whole time when I was doing this research, because they're not around now that we know of. And all I could really find in that legend was how they drove them out and they disappeared. But like, why? If they're so small and they only come out at night, I don't see yeah. what the danger, I guess, could be in that. But I mean, if they look exact opposite of you, like there's always going to be people that are threatened by what they don't,
mm-hmm.
by what's different or what they don't understand. So that was the only thing I could think of, is that they just looked and acted so differently that they were just like, no, you can't be here, I guess.
Yeah. Which maybe they were afraid of them too. Or maybe, you know, I guess they had to eat. So if they were coming out at night to work, you know, the land and grow food, maybe the Cherokee wanted the land for that, or yeah but all of that, yeah, is just a mystery.
Yeah.
What else did you find, Ryan?
I said just that, you know, and it kind of made me wonder, because when I started researching that, I went down like the rabbit hole, really wasn't able to find a lot of results as far as exactly like I was mm-hmm. saying, what was it so special about these people, or what was it that antagonized the Cherokee, or,
mm-hmm.
you know, were they really Welsh? Because they did find Welsh writing on the wall that we was just talking about. So obviously there was some Welsh descendants or background there. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the Welsh writing wouldn't be there.
Yeah, that's strange too.
You know, I'm trying to picture, you know, because you see the statue, flat face, you know, kind of a note, almost kind of reminds me of something like, you know, something off Stonehenge, or maybe, you know, Squidward off SpongeBob, you know the nose is quite not exaggerated. You know, so I'm trying to think or picture and draw some things. I went on, you know, and tried to do the AI thing to see if they would draw it, but they couldn't get it right.
Yeah.
You know, I get dwarves and hobbits and things like that. And I was trying to, that's not exactly what I'm looking for, but you know, if any of y'all actually have a picture of one of these folks, or, you know, would like to submit something, we would love to see, you know, or if you have ancestors that, you know, knew anything at the time, because, you know, some of us are of Indian descent, things like that. So y'all may have stories of the Moon Eye people or more that can share with us.
Yeah, more information. Yeah, for sure. I would love to hear somebody's story that had been passed down.
Like, even locals of Murphy now, like, it almost makes you wonder if they have local legends of like the moon-eyed people coming out of caves and like attack, you know how there's always local legends,
these mamas like telling their kids don't wander out like too far from the house and moon-eyed people will get you.
Yeah if you're not in by the time it gets dark. That would be awful.
True. That's funny.
Okay, well, if y'all don't have anything else, I've got a lot to share.
Okay, awesome.
About these moon people. Now, I've got all my research right here in front of me, because I was writing a bunch down today. But so we already went over that. For the most part, this whole idea comes from a Cherokee legend, right? Mm-hmm. There's not really anything before that, because they're saying that by the time they got there, the moon-eyed people were already there. And that was around 1100 AD. And like we went over, they were small, they were perfectly white, they had perfectly white skin, and they also had beards. I don't know if you guys found that. Yeah. Flat faces, had beards, very white skin, which, and I tried to do all this research and look up stuff, but I never once found any kind of mention of like a female moon-eyed person. Everything that I came across was that they had beards and they had really white skin and they had these really blue eyes, and they didn't come out during the daytime because the sun just hurt their eyes too much. And so they lived underground because they weren't able to see. Then I got a little confused, because there's a couple legends, like we said, and one of the Cherokee legends, in my research, I just started calling them MEPs, the moon-eyed people, MEPs. I just started calling them MEPs. And one of the legends, it says that the neighboring Creek Nation There was a war that broke out between the Moon-Eyed people and the neighboring Creek Nation, and that they drove the Moon-Eyed people from their homeland during a full moon. Because even the full moon was so bright that it kind of put them at a disadvantage because it was still too bright for their eyes. So they waited for the full moon to do that because they knew they weren't going to come out during the day. And so they picked a full moon because it was still going to be the brightest possibility at night. And so it did put them at a disadvantage, and they drove them from their homeland. But then the other legend says that it was actually the Cherokee themselves that fought a war with the Moon-Eyed people. And their homeland was, and I hope I'm saying this right, was Hiwassee, which is near Murphy. So that was their homeland, but then they drove them out of their homeland. So it makes me wonder, were they, because they were driven out of their homeland and then they went down underground into the caves. So it almost makes me wonder, okay, were there already caves in Hiwassee that they were living in, or were they trying to live above ground for a little bit and only come out at night, I guess, like living in shelters or something and only coming out at night? Or were they, had they just been living underground this whole time?
Yeah.
So I was curious about that, because that got me thinking. But I thought it was interesting that I came across this, that the Cherokee legend, a lot of Cherokee legends mention different supernatural creatures. Mm-hmm. Like they have all these mythical creatures, but they're usually separate from humans. But they do not describe Moon-Eyed people as supernatural beings. So they're not like mm-hmm. how fairies are, how the Fae people are to Ireland. They're not supernatural beings. They're in the same category as other tribes. Like, so they're like actual people. They're another tribe of people. And so I do want to pull up this picture of the fort that I found a picture of. So this is actually remnants of that wall that you all were talking about, the 850-foot, almost 900-foot long wall that's sometimes as short as 2 feet, sometimes as tall as 6-7 feet in places. And it stretches along the top of the ridge there in Fort Mountain State Park. So I just thought it was a really cool picture. I'd never seen it before. I didn't even know about this subject until a few weeks ago, because there's another podcast that I listen to, and it's called Two Girls, One Ghost, and they do all kinds of supernatural stuff. And they actually did an episode about the Moon-Eyed people of Appalachia. And I was so excited because I'd never even heard of this before in my entire life. And it's just so wild to me.
Yeah.
But when I first think of, like, when I first hear Moon-Eyed people of Appalachia, for some reason, instead of like really blue eyes, like in my mind, I'm just imagining like really big old eyes, like moon sized eyes. I don't know why that's the first thing that comes to mind to me, but it kind of is this very, in my mind, like almost alien looking, small, grayish white being. I don't know. That's what it is in my brain, at least. But so this is a picture of the wall that's still there in Fort Mountain State Park. And that's kind of right on the border of North Carolina and Georgia together, but constructed somewhere around 400 to 500 CE, I think is what we said. I mean, that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
That's a really long time ago. And there's so many other Native American structural remnants all across the country, all across America, Central America, South America. There's so many that you can find, but I almost feel like around us, like around our area, there's really not a ton that I know of.
Right.
Like in Colorado, Arizona, you have the Pueblo houses that were like in the cliff face. Those are really, really famously known. But I never really knew of any until I guess now that were actual stone ancient remnants close to us. So I was kind of surprised to learn about this one. So I wanted to know where these people could possibly come from, because there are a couple different legends out there of where they could possibly originate from.
And how they got here.
So This first one, I don't know how I feel about it, but I'll tell you anyway. It is possibly that they came from like a Welsh legend. So, and I don't know if I'm going to say this right, but I'm going to attempt it. Madoc Ab Owain Gwynedd was a Welsh prince, and he got tired of all the civil war going on around him. He just got fed up with his homeland. So he and his brother and some followers, they set sail to find a new place to live. So they, and this was like in 1170. And so they sail across the Atlantic. And like Ryan said, they landed somewhere near Mobile, Alabama, in the bay there. And so after they found this nice new place to live, he went back to find some more recruits. And then he set sail back to America and was never seen or heard from again. And this, I think, is a popular legend because there was like 11 ships maybe in total that I came across that were just never heard from again. So a lot of people think that they came back and this is where we get the Moon-Eyed People because they have pale skin. There are some similarities to the culture and the languages, but there's not a lot of real evidence to support this. And I saw that it probably came about as like English propaganda to lay England's claim to the New World, because this was right around the time that England and Spain were kind of closing in together. Mm-hmm. And of course, England's going to want to be the first one that gets there. So this story could possibly have just popped up as a, hey, we've already been there for like hundreds of years, so you guys are a little late to the game, kind of. But Thomas Jefferson referred to Welsh Indians and his Indian policy for the U.S. And I also saw that Lewis and Clark encountered Welsh Indians on their journey through America, too. So it does make an interesting point.
So wait, Lewis and Clark wrote about seeing people that look similar?
Yeah, like, and I think as I was reading, they actually used the term Welsh Indians.
Welsh Indians.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you a question about the Nordic people that were supposedly. Okay, aren't they like, they do have light eyes, light skin, blonde hair. Mm-hmm. Aren't they like tall though and like warrior like?
That's what people? I was thinking. Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not coming over as like these 3 foot tall,
yeah,
flat faced, already really pale. They were people that could be out in the sun, had been out in the sun forever. I mean, I didn't see any information about the sunlight hurting their skin and they had to sail over in the bottom of their boat because they couldn't come out during the day. I didn't find anything like that. So if this is the case, like if this is where we're getting the Moon-Eyed People, I mean, something had to have happened genetically to get them from a normal Welsh person down to this, I don't know, me-sized, like really, really pale, flat-faced, full beard, can't come out in the sunlight.
That kind of brings up a lot of different lore about several different supernatural creatures. Like,
yeah,
you know, aliens, you think, you know, white, pale skin, you know, but most of the time you think skinny, big eyes, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And also something that I was thinking about as we're talking about this is vampires.
Me too. Skin,
same.
You know, hypnotic eyes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And trancing. They only come out at night.
Uh-huh. Right?
And then, you know, mole people. You know, even though they might not be called Moon-Eyed People, but mole people that you've heard of would be very similar because they live underground and they can't see in bright light. So I'm sitting there thinking, wow, this can attach to a lot of things.
There's so many different tie-ins that you could do. And also, sorry, Brian just got home, so Champ's going to claw his way down the stairs in just a second. So that being said, I almost do the wonder the time around these Cherokee legends coming out, or not coming out, but like being told to white settlers in America. A lot of them viewed, like a lot of the ones coming over to the New World kind of viewed Native Americans as like small, just sparse groups. Didn't realize that they were actually huge populations of people, really diverse, rich cultures. Because a lot of these people that were coming in, like not the first people that came over, not the first settlers, but the various people coming over after, by the time they got over, I mean, 90% of Native Americans, some people think 90%, had already been wiped out by diseases just from the first contact with European settlers. So they're coming over, they're not really seeing a lot of Native Americans because they're just not around anymore because their immune systems weren't the same immune systems as the European settlers have. And they had just been decimated, just wiped out. So I guess in a way, maybe they're coming over and hearing these legends and thinking, well, maybe we had come over first and had just gotten here first. Because I feel like especially at that time with England and Spain at like kind of at war going to the New World, who can get there first? You want to come out with these legends that say that the claim is yours. Mm-hmm. But also in their minds, I think maybe it was easier for them to reconcile that these moon-eyed people were possibly their descendants because they had white skin and they didn't look anything like the Native Americans. And so possibly that's how they explained it away in their brain. But like Ryan was saying, the Cherokee chief, Conestoga, he told the story to John Sevierville, you know, we love a good Tennessee moment, in 1782. And he told the story about these Welsh Indians. The Welshmen came over. And then when the rest of the settlers came over, like years later, they did see similarities between their cultures. They had a lot of the same building styles as the Moon-Eyed people. Like they saw similarities with the wall. They saw similarities with their languages even. And then, you know, pale skin, blue eyes. But I also, like, I'm conflicted because I also think that giving all of this credit to the Welsh settlers kind of just takes away from the fact that Native American tribes could have also done all this. Like, it could be a different branch of Native Americans that were just, we didn't know about because it was so long ago. And that, yeah, they had all these buildings and they had these languages, but Native Americans had been doing that for hundreds and hundreds of years before European settlers even came over here. And they've been doing it better a lot of times than the Moon-Eyed people because their wall is still there, but there are a lot of other archaeological structures that exist in like a better state. So it's not that Native Americans couldn't do this. I think it's just in those settlers' minds, to them, they couldn't. It wasn't a possibility because they were, you know, not as intellectual as them. They weren't really thinking that they were the smartest people or that they could have languages or have culture. And I just think it's doing them a disservice by thinking that they came from the Welsh and it could only be from Europe that this legend comes from, you know. Mm-hmm. But I will say the chief, Conestoga, he did kind of tell that story as well. So I don't know. Just food for thought.
And hey, I wanted to add something. You know, when you were talking about Lewis and Clark, they were so detailed in their journals that if they had come across them, I mean, if they had thought the Moon-Eyed people were these Welsh Indians, I mean, that they looked so different, like their height and their build and everything. Yeah. I think that Lewis and Clark would have said, describe them, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And so it almost makes me wonder, like, if the Moon-Eyed people were descendants from the Welsh, did they somehow have influence or, like, intermarry with another tribe at some point and had, like, spread languages that way? Or spread influence that way. But I don't know. Like, I couldn't find any mention of that anywhere.
Yeah. But there's just so little out there.
Yeah, there's not a lot out there, but I just don't think it should be written off that this could also be another branch of, like, another tribe of Native Americans that mm-hmm. could stand entirely separately from the Welsh influence. It could very well be. I mean, there's similarities in other languages worlds apart, so you never know, you know? Yeah. But also, and I kind of made a note when you said it too, who was out there calling them these wretches? Why were they called them that?
Yeah, the guy that wrote the book was quoting, and I guess that's how the Cherokee thought of them, as wretches. And so
I just wish that, like, I'm glad that they have legends in the first place, because it does make for a very interesting story. But if you are going to war with them and you're out here just, like, straight calling them wretches to their faces, like, why? Like, let me know. What are they out here doing? They're just out here causing chaos during the night. Like, what is going on? They're like little garden gnomes that only come to life during the nighttime, like, steal all your crops. Like, what's going on?
Well, when Ryan said vampires, I thought, well, maybe they had a legend that there were vampires and they were afraid that they were vampires because they only came out at night. And what did they eat? And
I know, but it also makes me curious because they didn't write about them like they were a supernatural being. They were like, no, this is another tribe of people that we're getting rid of them. They're wretches. They're out here making our lives worse. I just really want to know why. But there's not really, and if that's more of like a, and this isn't a huge main part of Cherokee culture. Like, it's not. This is just like a short little side story, like cliff note. This was a thing. So if, I wonder if there are more like oral stories that have just been passed down orally that haven't been written down anywhere that people out there know of. And if that's the case, like, you know, anything new that we haven't said about these moon-eyed people, please let us know, because I'm very curious about
them. Yeah, me too.
Like, I want to know everything about them. Anyways, so in the 19th century, let me add this back up here.
Okay.
This statue that we talked about first. So in the 19th century, a farmer dug up this statue of these two small figurines on his land, and he actually dug it up and took it back and propped it up against his well house for a long time before it got put into the museum or donated to the museum. And it's just so odd looking to me, because it's obviously carved out of stone. But we're never going to know who made it or why they made it, or if it's even like, is it even a moon-eyed person? Like, is it that what it's supposed to be because the face is flat, or has that just happened naturally over time? Like, were there more details on this, or and it just got eroded? Or I'm very curious about it. But at the same time, I feel like it could also maybe just be a depiction of humans that an artist was wanting to make at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, we're never going to know. And that's one thing that gets me. It always gets me about art history, is that the really, really old stuff like this, we're never going to know what it is. Who is it supposed to be? Who made it? Why did they make it? How long did it take them? What's the title? Did they name it? Did they name it something? Where did they put it in their lives? Did they display it? I just have so many questions.
Or, you know, a lot of cultures make statues and things of the gods that they worship, right? And so I had that thought too, because it does look humanoid, but it almost looks like it doesn't have any arms, but maybe they've eroded away or they're like tucked behind them. I don't know. But they have these legs and these
tiny their little legs.
But I wondered that, you know, I wondered if it was like, you know, some of the ancient peoples in America and the cave drawings where they drew things that looked like aliens and they worshiped them. And
or did the moon-eyed people make this as a depiction of them?
Oh, that's another idea. Yeah.
Because, and I wish that I had pulled it in, but I found a picture of it, like, it displayed in the museum, and it's not big. Like, it's almost like a moon-sized person's height. Like, it's like a good 2 or 3 feet.
Okay.
Like it's small. But it also makes me wonder, why are they attached?
Uh-huh.
Are they supposed to be conjoined twins? Like,
I read in one of the things that I read, it said that some people believe they are conjoined because they represent the two rivers that met there. Huh. And one river was larger than the other. So therefore, one of the statues was taller.
The statue.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but, I like that. I mean,
yeah.
I love a good explanation for the questions that I have. I love it. Because they, and whoever was making this could very well have just made one person.
Uh-huh.
It would have been so much easier and faster to just make the one person, but they made two for a reason. And if that wasn't the reason, what was the reason?
What was the reason? Is it, is it supposed to be depicting a moon-eyed couple? Maybe a male and a female? I thought that because, you know, one was taller. But
where's the beard?
Yeah, exactly. And did the women, I mean, not women, but the females, did they have beards too? Because,
like, you know how in Lord of the Rings, isn't it Gimli who's like, the females also have beards?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Did he say that at one point in Lord of the Rings? So it kind of made me wonder, because I couldn't find anything about a female moon-eyed person. So it kind of made me wonder, like, did the females also have beards?
And you said, okay, we can't see a beard in this statue, but maybe it was like a little goatee-like thing.
And you sort of wrote it away over time.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. That would be interesting to know, too.
It's definitely a very primitive, very early, like, primitive depiction of a human.
And it said it was pecked out. So somebody spent a lot of time, whoever created this, spent a lot
carving
of time
that
doing,
away.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot. I mean, that would take so long. I mean, that's stone right there. And obviously it's probably, I don't know, fossilized is the right word. Petrified is
maybe
the right word. But it's over time, obviously, like, solidified more than it originally was.
Yeah.
So maybe it was a softer stone to begin with, but
talc is like, pretty soft, you know. It's not as hard as the others, but I would have liked to have seen it when it was like first made and it was white and, you know, whitish and not discolored like it is now.
Yeah. I'm very intrigued by this little statue. I am. I wonder if they have replicas in the gift shop of this museum.
Oh, that's a good question.
Because I want to get one for my classroom. And then when my students ask me about it, I can be like, have you heard of the Moon-Eyed People of Appalachia? Yeah, I didn't think you did. Listen to this story. Go listen to my podcast.
Yeah.
No, not really.
Well, we've covered a lot of the theories. Were there any others?
I have a couple other ones.
Okay.
That I don't think will take too long. But I went on a short little dive on Reddit, because Reddit always has something to say about everything.
Yeah, they do.
So the first comment that I found, and I didn't find a lot, but the first one that I found was from Trail Snail Princess.
Trail Snail Princess?
Trail Snail Princess. And she had commented on, because somebody had posted and was asking about moon-eyed people and if anybody knew anything about them. And she said that according to her grandmother, I think, Chimney Rock is said to be inhabited by the moon-eyed people. I don't know if they think that Chimney Rock was built by the moon-eyed people or if it's just inhabited. But according to her grandma, they're said to be good spirits who protect cave systems in the Appalachian Mountains. Which kind of goes against what we know that the Cherokee thought about them. To me, this puts them on more of a plane as like fey people. Mm-hmm. Like they're the good folk. They're good spirits that protect the cave systems. I don't know, that was a different take.
Yeah, that is. And it shows you how over the centuries they could evolve into something supernatural. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not going to leave with my questions yet. I found one more. I just happened to come across this, and I didn't find this as a theory for any moon-eyed people associated things, but I thought it was interesting.
Okay.
So I'm not going to put the picture up just yet. The Kuna Indians are a small indigenous population in Central America. They're located in the province of Cunayala, which is made up of about 400 mini San Blas islands off of East Panama.
Okay.
Now, these people have the highest rate, I don't know if I can say this, of oculocutaneous albinism in the world, the highest rate of this specific albinism in the world. And they're often called moon children. Huh. And are said to have special powers and hold prime positions in their community, like shamans and leaders and doctors.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not a lot of medical research known about them because it's just such a hard community to break into. They really pride themselves on being tight-knit, on community. They haven't really gone out as a people. You can go to the islands, of course. It's not like that one island that the natives don't let anybody, it's like illegal to go there. They don't let anybody come to the island. They'll shoot you and kill you. These people aren't like that. They just kind of, I don't want to say shun, but they aren't big on like the westernization because they have their own culture and their own community. So it's not something that I think they really need. To me, out of all the theories that we've heard, could a breakoff of this tribe have traveled northwards in search of a less harsh environment? Because they're down there in Panama. Like it's tropical, it's hot, yeah. It's sunny. If they have light skin and the sun hurts their eyes, maybe they're thinking, okay, yeah, we have our people are here, but I want to see if I can find a better place for us to live. Mm-hmm. And so maybe they broke off and went and explored, and maybe they found a cooler, shadier, more beautiful. I mean, the Appalachian Mountains are beautiful and cool a lot of the year. Cool, cold, a lot of the year. I mean, it doesn't really
get dark.
It doesn't really get super hot. I mean, it gets up to like mid 80s, but maybe compared to the tropical climate in Panama, maybe that's a reprieve for them. Who knows? To me, this makes more sense that a migration of central native peoples could be the moon-eyed people. This makes more sense than a group of Welsh explorers sailing across the Atlantic, ignoring the first sights of land and going all the way around the Florida coastline, all the way around the panhandle to land in Alabama. So you're telling me they're going, they're seeing land, they're seeing the East Coast, they're coming over, and they're seeing the whole Florida coastline, but they're thinking, no, let's not land there yet. We've been on this ocean traveling for months, probably. I don't really know how long it would take. Probably months. We've been on this boat forever with the same people, with the same food. We're going to see this coastline and we're not going to try to land. We're going to sail all the way around till we get to Alabama. To me, that makes less sense than this Native American tribe. Now, I'm not saying that this is exactly what's happened and this is for sure, but here's what some of their people look like. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So they have obviously the highest rate of this albinism in the world. But, I mean, that doesn't mean that they have other types of people there. So you can definitely see the Native American influence, like they're central Native Americans. But you're seeing that really pale skin, that really blonde hair. And it kind of makes me wonder, too, because a lot of times when somebody has this albinism, they either have like purple eyes sometimes, really, really, really pale blue eyes sometimes, just various colored eyes. So maybe this tribe comes up through through the coastline to America, maybe kind of finds other tribes to blend with, mm-hmm. and genetically something happened to turn them into these really small, I don't know.
Well, they're not big in this picture.
These are kids, though. A lot of these
are
kids.
But is this person on the left, far left in the back, they're not even that tall.
I'm not sure. I just found the picture. I didn't find names or anything, but I don't know. It makes me wonder.
Yeah.
And I didn't find anything about that being a theory anywhere. But I thought it was interesting. And this guy, this is Chief Conestoga. That's who that was. I forgot to pull his picture up. I don't know what Champ is mad about.
I have a question. while we were speaking, some things hit my mind, and it may be like way, way off because my mind's out there anyhow. What if, like, the people who made the wall and stuff, what were they just like a regular tribe of Indians? But the people they're calling Moonam people, there was just very few of them, and they come out at nighttime like mystical aliens or a supernatural type being, right? Or they were some of those, right? Because it just kind of makes you, how many were they, you know? And, you know, they had to be so significantly different.
Yeah.
And because Cherokees, you know, they're normally a tough tribe, you know, they're hunting tough like that. There has to be a reason why they want to exterminate or abolish, you know, these people, right? Mm-hmm. And when she starts talking about, what was the word that you said a while ago, Lindsay, that they described them as?
The moon children.
The moon children.
Yeah. No, not moon children. The Cherokee people, they wanted to eliminate these.
The wretches. Oh,
yeah, the wretches. So I'm thinking, okay, moonlight, wretches, you know, they're a pain. So I think cockroach, like when the light comes on, they all scatter. You know, they only come out at nighttime. So to me, that's what I'm thinking, okay, what would make the Cherokee say that? So to me, that's what popped in the head. To the Cherokee Indian, they were like cockroaches.
Yeah.
You know, they only come out at night. They're a pain. You know, when the light hits them, they just
a nuisance or something.
So, a nuisance, yeah.
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 Or here's another theory that ties into what you just said about, what was the tribe we last talked about? The Central American?
The Kuna Indians.
The Kuna Indians. Okay. So what if some of them did break away, come north, and they would have brought their own culture, right? And you said that the people who didn't have this albinism in the tribe called them the moon children and said they believed they had special powers. Mm-hmm. So what if the ones, it's just, you know, hypothetically, that came north and settled and came into contact with these other, you know, the Creek and the Cherokee tribes, and they were like, yeah, we got special powers, we got magic powers, and, you know, maybe they were afraid of that.
Yeah, maybe they were like, felt threatened by it.
Yeah. And they were weird anyway, because they only came out at night. I mean, and you know, the Cherokee, they had all kinds of supernatural folklore.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, they just were like, we don't want to mess with these people. That's, you know, we need to get rid of these people. If they got magic powers, we don't want them around here, you know? Yeah. But like you said, they didn't talk about them in the same, they didn't equate them as supernatural.
Yeah, they weren't on the same plane as like their other, because they had specific like mm-hmm. supernatural tales that they talked more about the Moon-Eyed people as like another tribe.
Yeah, just
people, which I thought was interesting. And mm-hmm. I don't want to, like, I'm not sitting here saying like, this is exactly what the Cherokee said, and this is exactly their story, because I don't know. Like, I'm obviously not Cherokee, so I don't know.
But you do have Cherokee, that she runs. You got but that
can't
Cherokee
see it,
blood.
Can
you can't see it, but
can't see it.
That's because those Scottish genes were real strong from our paternal grandpa.
Well, so these are my last questions. These are my ending questions, my burning questions for this topic, okay? Number one, why were they attacked and annihilated? I just don't think we'll ever know for sure the exact right answer to that. And that, to me, is like my number one burning question, because if they hadn't been attacked and annihilated, would descendants of this tribe still be around? Would they look similar? Would they have completely different oral tales and cultures? Like, I just think it's a shame. If they were annihilated, if they were not annihilated, if they just drove them underground and they disappeared, are they still around? Like, where are they? Are they still in some cave system somewhere and they've just been down there this whole time and have never come back up to the top side, because the last time they did, they got pushed away and wiped out? I mean, it makes you wonder.
It does,
because there's so many, especially if you watch shows like Missing 411, you know that there's these huge cave systems all over the country. Oh, yeah. That kind of correlate with a lot of missing persons reports. So it makes you wonder, you know, that there are cave systems out there that are so long and deep, just miles and miles and miles. So is it possible that these moon-eyed people who were trying their hardest to get away from the sun kind of just decided, you know what, we'll just make a life down here and we'll never come back up? It's a thinker.
Yeah, it's a thinker.
It's a thinker. Well, anyways, that's everything I have. Those are my questions. I think this is so interesting.
Mm-hmm. Maybe not as scary as we're used to, but it's really, really mind-boggling to think about. And you were talking about caves. I know in Kentucky is one of the largest cave systems in the world, Mammoth Caves. Mm-hmm. It's like 400 miles long or something crazy like that.
Like a whole world down there.
Yes, exactly. And wow.
That most people would never go in. I mean, there's those explorers and those people that like spelunking and that like to go and fit in those really tight places where you can't even move. But I will never be one of those people.
Me either. Not Ron, me. What kind of questions do you have? I mean, I feel like, again, we're left with more questions than answers.
Yeah.
Always.
I agree. Like I said, I just want to reach out, because there's got to be somebody out there that knows more about this, right? Mm-hmm. And I agree with Lindsay and yourself as far as I want to know the rest of the story. Why were they so hated by the Cherokee, right? Mm-hmm. What made them go underground originally? What was their purpose? I mean, you know, why did they go underground in the first place? So, you know, and yeah, there's, like you said, it just, everything that you look brings up another question, pretty much like a lot of our podcasts, right? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But we do try to get to the bottom of it, you know, and there's people out there that know the answers, and we hope they reach out to us. But this is something original that, I mean, I think I've seen those statues before, but I never really paid much attention to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you look at them, to me, they kind of look alien-like, or like, you know, mm-hmm. and like most people that make statues like that, that's something they worship, like you guys touched on earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of makes you wonder, like, okay, like the cave system, where does this thing go? You know, it could be a whole civilization under there of these people, of this, you know, different culture that we have no idea about.
Yeah. Well, my burning question is, I had not heard about that, about the Kuna tribe and their albinism. And my question is, I wonder if in their culture, they have any stories about, some of them many, 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 many years ago left and went, you know, north, and we never saw them again. I would love to know if they have any kind of legends like that. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. All the theories are
right. Or the people underground, they have stories of the surface world, right? Like you see on these different movies.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't want to go to the surface world. It's forbidden, you know, and you see like the teenagers going, what are you doing? I'm going up to the surface world, yeah. You know?
Okay, now I want a movie about moon-eyed people.
Yeah, I definitely do. Yeah, that would be interesting.
And you know what? We didn't even really talk a lot about how alien they sound and seem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I could have really gone hard with the alien thing, but I was like, you know what? I'm gonna chill on the aliens for now.
Well, I tried. I couldn't
tie aliens into everything, but I'll calm it down.
The one thing that is the most interesting to me, besides how they looked, how they were physically described, is that, you know, we don't know like what they ate. We don't know. There's so much that we don't know about them, but it just.
No, I'm wondering, did they like come up and harvest crops like normal? Or did they like hunt like normal during, but it would be really hard to hunt during the night because unless you're hunting nocturnal animals,
right?
Animals are sleeping. They're not out walking around eating. They're mm-hmm. asleep. So it does make me wonder how they got their nutrition and survived.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they could plant and grow at night, you know, and water mm-hmm. at night. A lot of times the almanac will even tell you, go plant this by the light of the moon or, you know, mm-hmm. things like that. So they could have, but it does make you wonder. I mean, they had to hunt. They had to have protein of some sort, right?
Yeah.
But I read somewhere that if you didn't have anything except sweet potatoes and peanuts, you would get all your vitamins and minerals that you needed to survive. So that's two foods. Mm. No, I read that somewhere. I don't know, you know, if it's 100%, but you could get most of your daily recommended. Huh?
It's probably true for somebody. I don't think it would be true for me. I don't think I could survive without like French fries.
I also have another question that I kind of come up with earlier. You know, when you talk about the Cherokee attacking them at the full moon, where it's at its brightest, where it would do the most damage, right? But I had kind of scanned over some of that when I was at work or on break. You know, I didn't really get a dig into it. And when I first read it, I was like, okay, they only come out at nighttime. Why would you do it when the moon was out? And I'm thinking, okay, if they're nocturnal creatures, my mind goes back to vampires. Okay, if I'm going to hunt a vampire, what am I going to do? It's going to be daytime. I'm staking that bad boy at noon on the daytime when he's not up. Right? So I'm thinking, why didn't I not go down here during the day whenever they knew they wasn't active or they might be sleeping?
Yeah. Or maybe they didn't know where they went when they went down in the caves. Maybe they felt like if they went down, they would be at a disadvantage.
Yeah.
You know, because they would have had to take like light, torches.
Yeah, and if they went down in the caves, it's going to be pitch dark in there. Their eyes aren't going to be trained like the moon-eyed people's eyes probably were. So I don't know.
Well, I said more questions.
More questions and answers. This has been a great episode.
So interesting.
Yeah. And hopefully, you know, if anybody out there knows anything else or has heard other stories or theories about these moon-eyed people, we would love to hear those. So send them in to us at our sirensofthesupernatural@gmail.com. And if you have any other stories about any other supernatural topics, we welcome those too. We would love to read those on the air. So send them in. Follow us on our socials. We're Sirens of the Supernatural on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and at Supernatural Sirens on TikTok. We've been trying to be a little bit more and hope to be even more active on our socials and maybe put some more polls up and different fun things too, so that gives our listeners, you know, a chance to interact with us. So be looking for that. And our next week's episode topic is we're still kind of deciding. So stay tuned, watch our socials to see what's coming up next Friday. And we hope you enjoyed this episode. And Lindsay and Ryan, I hope you have a great rest of the week and weekend. It's my birthday on Saturday. So I'll be celebrating my birthday this weekend and probably next weekend too. So, woohoo. Chorus season, right? Yeah. Not tourist, Taurus. Okay. Do y'all have any parting words?
No.
Yes, we can't leave without, you know, greeting our supernatural friends out there, right? So we need to tell them.
Yeah. Stay spooky. Bye.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate
it. Bye, guys.